You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. WRCT is... Oh, let me first tell you what you're listening to. You're listening to Record Roulette, which is an hour of random records from our record library. This week's theme is unlabeled techno. So we're pulling from our techno section, and it's anything that doesn't have a label. So we've got a lot of vinyls with black covers, white covers, some miscellaneous words, a lot that say WRCT. That's about it. WRCT is supported by Attic Records, located in Millville. Attic Records is open 7 days a week. They sell new and used records and CDs from a range of genres, including rock, doo-wop, metal, reggae, and hip-hop. Attic Records is an independently owned and operated shop that purchases used records and CDs from collectors in bulk or by unit. Attic Records is located at 513 Grant Avenue in Millville. More information about selling records and new releases is available at 412-821-8484 or at atticrecordsstoreinc.com. If you're interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities.
Liquid means rewind, a gunshot means forward. You requested it, so we rewind. Tune in to Liquid Means Rewind on Thursdays at 11 p.m. to hear the finest selection of jazz, dub, reggae, house, techno, two-step garage, jungle, and more. Hosted by Big Cashew, only on WRCT Pittsburgh.
Ultraviolent with DJ Peachy. Music that dances on the edges of the spectrum where light turns electric and sound defies convention. From Brazilian house to Russian D&B and everything in between. Tune in on Mondays from 1 to 2 p.m. and let Ultraviolent illuminate the wavelengths of music.
You are getting sleepy. Very sleepy. Get cozy late Thursday nights at 11:30. For a half hour of classic bedtime stories. Pull over and get some needed shut-eye with your host, Chamomile, for some sleepy time tea. If you want to hear more of this voice, tune in after the show at 11:30. It's around about 11 p.m., so we gotta do what everyone loves doing, reading the radio calendar and the music calendar of WRCT. Did you know that that's the station you're listening to? You're probably tuned into 88.3 FM, or maybe you're on WRCT.org, but no matter what, you're listening, and that's what's important. The Harris Theater presents I'm Still Here from February 7th to February 13th. Never mind, that was a week ago. Liberty Magic presents Whose Trick Is It Anyway? An improv comedy magic show by Dan Harmon, Eric Meredith, and Michael Misko. Imagine this, the best magicians in Pittsburgh. No script and a whole lot of laughs. From spontaneous card tricks to impromptu mentalism, anything can happen. Whose Trick Is It Anyway? At Liberty Magic, 811 Liberty Avenue, downtown, March 19th through March 29th. More information available at trustarts.org/MMagic. Additionally, you can stop by the Pittsburgh Banjo Club's regular rehearsal every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Founded in 1988, the Pittsburgh Banjo Club is an all-volunteer band and organization that uses banjos, trumpets, tubas, and bass to perform popular music from the 1920s and 30s. Pittsburgh Banjo Club rehearses at the Allegheny Elks Lodge, number 339, 400 Cedar Avenue in the north side. Food and refreshments are available. Reservations must be made by Tuesday at 5 p.m. for each Wednesday event. Call 412-321-1834 for reservations. If you or your organization would like an event included in the WRCT radio calendar, please send the details at least 2 weeks in advance to radio-calendar@wrct.org. Similarly, you can email it to music-calendar@wrct.org to get your event on the music calendar. Let's listen to it now. So today, as you may know, is the tail end of Thursday, February 20th. But tomorrow, if you want to maybe get down, dance somewhere, move your body, you could go to the Warped Band. Actually, yeah, you can go to the Warped Band at Thunderbird at 8 p.m. That's tomorrow, Friday the 22nd. 21st, I apologize. But on the 22nd, you can go to the Funhouse at Mr. Smalls and listen to Hedonism Bots, which is their album release show with Dumplings. And finally, at the Government Center on Sunday at 8 p.m., you can hear Writhing Squares, Astrology Now, and Crush Curl. Enjoy this blank album cover techno that we are selecting record roulette style, which means randomly, from our vast record library. Enjoy.
Thank you. toca a pana que tem. Tutu tipo tutu que te bem. Tu curte a cerola com massa e vem do pé, meu bem. We'll be right back.
Good evening, everybody. You are listening to Sleepy Time Tea with Chamomile. This week, we will be reading The Man Who Could Imitate a Bee. I believe I may close this door. So listen to some more rain. Reading The Man Who Could Imitate a Bee by Richard Connell. I'm going to position the mic as such that I can read off of my iPad in a comfortable manner. Because I think that you should also get into whatever manner you deem comfortable. Because I'll be reading for the next just about a half hour until the night becomes tomorrow. That's called midnight. But apologies for that static, weird, crunchy sound you heard about 2 minutes ago, 3 minutes ago. Sometimes there's bees that live in our wires. But let's begin. This is The Man Who Could Imitate a Bee by Richard Connell. It was not until his 22nd year that Hervey Deo realized that he was taking life too seriously. Then the realization struck him sharply. He had been a serious infant and had nursed more from a sense of duty than pleasure. His juvenile marble and hoop games had been grave affairs conducted with nicety and decorum. He learned to read shortly after he was breeched, and at 7 presented a slip at the public library for the encyclopedia from A to Z. The librarian demurred, but he gently insisted. He was permitted to carry it home volume by volume. At 12, he had resolved to be a scientist, and furthermore, a great scientist. He determined to pursue the career of ornithologist. There was something so dignified and withal scientific about a science that called the sparrow Passer domesticus, and the robin Erythicus rubicula. He made rapid progress. On his 13th birthday, he took a bird walk at dawn and was able to record in his notebook the scientific names of 49 birds, including the ruby and topaz hummingbird, parentheses Chrysolampus mosquitus, which is rare around Boston. At 15, he wrote a daring monograph which proved beyond cavil that it would be possible to revivify the extinct great auk, Plotus impennis, by a judicious and protracted series of matings between the penguin, Sphenoscormus, and the ostrich. This theory was hotly challenged by a German savant in a 70,000-word exegesis. Hervey Deo crushed him under a 100,000-word rejoinder, and thus at a tender age came to enjoy a certain decent celebrity in the world of ornithology. At 17, still in the university, he was becoming known as a first-rate all-round bird man. He rather looked down on old Fod at the Natural History Museum, who was a beetle man, particularly on Armbuster, who was a mere bee man. Yes, Armbuster and his bees decidedly wearied Hervey Deo, as if bees counted. Something revolutionary happened to him in the spring of his 22nd year. The mild spring evenings, biology, inexorable nature, conspired against him. His mind began to reach out for contacts with new things outside the world of birds. He made the disturbing discovery that he could be interested in things unfeathered. Girls, for example. He made this discovery at a tea to which he had gone, most reluctantly with his mother, who was intensely serious about her social duties. He found himself sitting on a divan beside a girl. Her hair was blonde and bobbed, and she had an attentive little smile. To be polite, he explained to her the essential differences between the European redstart and its cousin, the American flycatching warbler. As he talked, the notion grew on him that teas were not the bore that he had thought them. It disconcerted him when the girl rather abruptly left him to join a fattish young man who had just entered. Hervey Deo could tell at a glance that the newcomer had not the intellect to so much as stuff a lark. His alert mother spied his lonely state and steered onto another corner and another girl. He sought to fascinate her with an account of the curious circumstance that the male loon has three more bones in his ankle than the female of that species. He told her this in strictest confidence, for it was the very latest gossip of the world of ornithology. He could not but note that after 15 minutes her attention seemed to wander. Presently, she murmured some vague excuse and slipped away to join a laughing group in another part of the room. He followed her flight with a glum eye. The group appeared to have as its center the fattish young man, and it was growing distinctly hilarious. Hervey Deo had a pressing, but he told himself wholly scientific interest in learning what conversational charm or topic made the fattish young man so much more interesting than himself. He edged his chair within earshot. The young man was not talking. He appeared to be making a series of odd noises through his nose, varied now and then by throaty bellows.
Nor, whir.
The trained ear of Hervey Deo was puzzled. Clearly they were not bird noises, yet they had a scientific sound. Perhaps the fattish young man was a scientist after all, a mammal man.
Nork, whir.
The girl with the attentive smile solved the mystery. She called across the room, "Oh, Bernice, do come over here. You simply must hear Mr. Mullet imitate a trained seal." Hervey Deo felt actually ill. So that was the secret of Mr. Mullet's powers, that was the magnet?
Nork, whir.
Hervey Deo could not stand it. Stiffly, he went out, and as he took his hat and stick, he could still hear the laughter and the fainter.
Nork, whir.
In a fury of disgust, he went to his laboratory and so violently stuffed a grackle that it burst. Next day, he realized that something annoying had happened. It was happening to him. He could not keep his mind on his work. It kept straying, despite him, to the little girl with the attentive smile. She'd been interested in his talk of birds until the accomplished Mr. Mullet, imitator of trained seals, had made his untimely appearance. His teeth gritted together at the thought. That afternoon, he surprised his mother by suggesting that he accompany her to a tea. She was glad his social consciousness seemed to be aroused at last. They went. "Who is Mr. Mullet?" he asked her as they rode T-word in her motor car, a product of the seriousness applied by Mr. Deo, Sr., to his brick business. "Mr. Mullet? Why, he's one of the Brooklyn Mullets." "Brookline Mullets," his mother said. "Why? Is he an animal man?" "No, he sells insurance." "He seems popular." "Oh, yeah, he has some parlor tricks." "I beg pardon, mother, the illusion escapes me." "Parlor tricks," repeated his mother. "He imitates a trained seal. It appears to strike the younger people as excessively comical. I believe he can also swallow a lighted cigarette." Hervey emitted a polite moan.
"Must one do parlor tricks?"
"They have their uses," said his mother. The girl with the attentive smile was at the tea, and Hervey Deo captured her. Her name was Mina Lowe. He was congratulating himself on having interested her in this new monograph on parakeet bills, when she sprang up with a little cry of pleasure. "Oh, Mr. Deo, there's Ned Mullet. Let's get him to imitate a trained seal. He's perfectly killing." "I do not know seals," said Hervey Deo severely. "They fail to attract me. I'm a bird man." He left the tea with a heavy heart while the talented mullet was bellowing,
Nork, whir.
Lying in his bed that night, the brain of Hervey Deo entertained two thoughts. One was that Miss Lowe was a singularly charming girl. The other was he could not interest her by birds alone. How then? He analyzed the situation with the same care and logic he applied to the dissection of a hummingbird. His conclusion was revolting, but inescapable. He must master a parlor trick. He shuddered at the notion, but he was resolved. "The end justifies the means," he muttered. He rose early and attacked the problem with the weapons of science. In his notebook, he carefully wrote down all the animals and the sounds they made, with comments and remarks on their value as entertainment. Anteater.
Wee-wee.
That one's difficult. Buffalo.
Roar.
Uncouth. Bull.
Horror.
Two-leg buffalo. Beagle. Yerp. Lacks dignity. Elephant.
Row.
That one's hard on one's throat. He went through the list of the mammals, and the result was disappointing. None of them seemed so interesting as a seal, and besides, he did not wish to lay himself open to the charge of plagiarism. He could not, of course, employ the calls of birds. Although he was rather good at that, it seemed sacrilegious to employ ornithology as a parlor trick. He turned his attention to the noises made by inanimate things. He jotted down in his book, foghorn, buzzsaw, locomotive, saxophone. He was considering them with furrowed brow when Armbuster agitatedly burst in. He disliked Armbuster and gave himself too many airs for a mere B-man. Hervey considered it rather an imposition when Armbuster was given an adjoining laboratory at the museum. "Have you seen her, Deo?" cried Armbuster. "Her? Who?" "My queen. She's escaped." "No," said Hervey Deo coldly. It was annoying to have one's thoughts broken in upon, to be asked about a wretched bee. "If you do see her, please be sure to tell me," said Armbuster. "Certainly." The bee man vanished. Hervey Deo again bent over his notebook. He added the words, "dentist's electric drill." I was considering whether Miss Lowe would regard an imitation of it as unpleasant, when a faint sound caused him to turn his head. A large bumblebee was crawling up the window pane, grumbling to herself. Hervey Deo watched and listened. His first thought was to capture her and return her to Armbuster. He reached out his hand toward her. She bumbled noisily and eluded him. It came to him as a flash of inspiration that his problem was solved. He'd imitate a bee. He knew it was not honorable to keep her, but he did. He spent the afternoon chasing her up and down the pane with a gloved hand. She muttered and grumbled and buzzed. Bzzz, bzzz, bzzz. He smiled a smile of grim triumph. What was a trained seal raucous bellow to this? Softly he imitated the sounds she made. Patiently he practiced. Before dusk came, he was satisfied with the perfection of his imitation, and yet not entirely satisfied. The thing lacked a dramatic quality. It came to no climax. He could buzz loudly and softly, angrily or soothingly, but there was no grand finale. He felt that one was needed. Mr. Mullet ended his seal imitation with a crescendo roar. A thought, murderous and ruthless, shot into one of Hervey Deo's brain cells. Normally, he was neither murderous nor ruthless. Quite gentle, indeed, but love brings out the primal man. For the sake of Mina Lowe, he would, for a second, be atavistic. He chased the protesting bee across the pane. He got her into a corner. His gloved hand closed on her. She buzzed frantically. He closed his thumb and forefinger smartly together. He cut her off in full buzz with a sharp, incisive sound like a torch plunged into a pond. A perfect climax. Hurriedly, furtively, he fed her corpse to a live flamingo in a cage in the corner. On his way home, he passed Armbuster in the hall. Armbuster was distractedly searching for his queen. He was peering under a rug. Hervey Deo did not meet the bee man's eye. In his room that night, he practiced assiduously his new accomplishment. Bzz, bzz, bzz. He attained protection in that final shrill staccato bzzoof. His mother, hearing the sounds, came to the door to ask if he was ill. He called her in. "Listen," he said. Bzz, bzz, bzz. "Oh dear," she cried, "a bee, where is he?" Hervey bowed. "I am he," he said. He amazed his mother still more next day by asking her to give a tea for him at the earliest opportunity. He mentioned matter-of-factly that he wouldn't mind having her ask Miss Mina Lowe. He planned the seating scientifically. He saw to it that he and Miss Lowe were seated together in a quiet corner near a window. When she had finished her first cup of tea, he turned to her suddenly, his eyes excited. "I say, Miss Lowe, look." Bzz, bzz, bzz. Trying to pursue an imaginary bee up the window pane and catch it, and to catch him at last. "Oh, it's a bee," she cried. "Where?" he asked with a smile. "Oh, it's not really one. It was you. Oh, do it again." He did it again. Bzz, bzz, bzz. She clapped her hands in ecstasy. "Oh, Mr. Deo, how perfectly wonderful. I didn't think you..." "What? Oh, let me call the others." "If you wish," said Hervey Deo. They gathered about him. Bzz, bzz, bzz. They were enchanted. "Oh, do it again," they begged. He did. the gracious smile Hervey Deo acceded to their request. He glowed. He was tasting the heady draught of sudden popularity. Late arrivals at the tea were told of his accomplishment. They insisted on hearing it. Bzz, bzz, bzz. Quite casual acquaintances came up to invite him to their homes, to teas, to dinner parties. He smiled and promised to come. From the corner of his eye, he could see that Miss Lowe was regarding him with something very like interest. He went to a dinner party at the home of Professor and Mrs. Murgatroyd. He had been stuffing an emu, and it had been so absorbed in him that he was late. It had so absorbed him that he was late. He entered with the fish course, and the guest beamed expectantly. "Oh, here is Mr. Deo," cried his hostess. "We were so afraid you'd disappoint us. I've been telling everyone about your perfectly delicious imitation of a bee." He obliged them. Bzz, bzz, bzzurf. They encored him. One of the guests was the fattish young man, Mr. Mellet, but the spotlight had shifted from him, and he sat eating morosely and regarding Hervey Deo with a bilious, jealous eye. During the dessert, Mr. Mellet essayed to bark like a seal, but Mrs. Murgatroyd looked at him disapprovingly, and he never reached the roared climax. He buried his chagrin in the pesh melba. Hervey Deo, observing, smiled quietly to himself. After dinner, he had a tete-a-tete with Mina Lowe. For her own special and private diversion, he twice repeated his imitation. On the second occasion, he ventured to take her hand, and she pretended to be so absorbed in the imitation that she did not notice. Three nights later, he called on her at home. It was with difficulty that her young brothers were finally dragged off to bed. The imitation fascinated them, and Hervey Deo was forced to do it no less than seven times. He was getting to be a virtuoso. He could keep it up for 5 minutes at a time, now pretending that the bee was in the lampshade, now under a glass, now behind the piano, and even up the pant leg of the youngest low boy. When he and Mina were at last alone together, he pretended that the bee was buzzing very near her blonde bobbed hair, and capturing it, he kissed her. Their engagement was announced the following Friday. It's a little bit quick, if you ask me. A notice in the local newspaper pleased and yet vaguely disturbed Hervey Deo. Described him thus. Mr. Hervey Deo is well known in local society. He is a gifted scientist and has gained a reputation for his ability to imitate a bee. As he reread this, he could not but feel that some reference should have been made to the fact that he was the author of an authoritative work on the cuckoo, that he was a doctor of philosophy, and that in the fall he was become chief curator of birds in the museum. Still, he reflected, newspapers haven't room to print everything. They strive to print what to them are the salient facts. He and his fiancée went about a great deal, and the party at which Hervey Deo did not give his imitation of a bee was adjudged a sterile affair. Frequently he congratulated himself in those days that it took a man of science to know when to be serious and when not to be. They were married in August, and no less than 17 friends sent the happy pair various representations of bees as wedding gifts. They received bronze bees, porcelain bees, silver bees, gold bees, and a pewter bee. His colleagues at the museum gave him a handsome bronze inkstand made to resemble a beehive. On his return from his honeymoon, Hervey Deo threw himself into his bird labors at the museum with energy. He was a bird man, even a first-class bird man, and so far his ambition was gratified, but it still burned with a hot, unappeased flame. He wanted to be the digression from the relentless pursuit of this aim. There was a constant demand for him socially, and as Mina was fond of teas and parties and bridge and balls, he found himself giving rather less time to his birds than formerly. He was by no means averse to a measure of social life. A great scientist can afford to have his human side, he assured himself. Wherever he went with Mina, be it tea, party, bridge, or ball, he was invariably pressed to give his imitation of a bee. He would bow, he would let them insist a bit, invariably he gave it. Bzz, bzz, bzz. No stranger ever came to the city who did not, sooner or later, hear that screamingly funny fellow Deo and his perfectly killing imitation of a bee. His fame spread. He had been married a number of years and had a child or two when he came home one evening, visibly excited. "My dear," he called to his wife, his voice full of excitement, triggered tinged with awe, "tonight I am to meet Professor Schwebel. He just came to town. Think of it. Carl Humperdinck Schwebel." "Schwebel?" said Mina blankly. "You don't mean to say you've never heard of Schwebel?" I'm afraid not. But I've spoken of him scores of times. Oh, perhaps you have, she said, yawning. I thought he was a bird. Why, Schwebel is the biggest bird man in the world, he exclaimed. It'll be a big night in ornithology when Schwebel and Deo shake hands. He must know my work. Of course he must. He can't have missed that great Auk monograph in the Cuckoo book. He was so excited he could hardly tie his dinner tie. Schwebel, he kept repeating. The great Schwebel. I've wanted to meet him all my life. He comes at just the right time, too. Just when my paper on the Pura Europia, Bullfinch, my dear, is causing talk. Don't forget your galoshes, admonished Mina. Her video, red, proud, and flustered, was introduced half an hour later to that great bohemian savant, Professor Schwebel, at the university club. Professor Schwebel made him a courtly bow. Charmed, Dr. Deo, he said. I have heard much about you. Hervey Deo bowed deeply. He was warm and crimson with pleasure. Oh, really? He murmured. Yes, said the distinguished visitor. Who hath not heard of Deo, the bee man? Deo, the bee man? Harvey was stunned. I a bee man? No. Pardon many times. You are but too modest, said Professor Schwebel, wagging his index finger at the stricken Deo. But surely you are that same Deo who makes the sound like the bee. Hervey Deo stuttered. He would have flung out a denial, but the other scientists had gathered about. Oh, come, Deo, they urged him. There's a good chap. Imitate a bee for the professor. Hervey bit his lips. How is it? Encouraged Professor Schwebel. Bzzz. No, cried Harvey Deo wildly. Not like this. Bzzz, bzzz, bzzz. Oh, most droll, said Professor Schwebel. You have talent. You are a comedian. You should go on the stage. Hervey Deo could not articulate. Professor Schwebel addressed him in the tone Hervey knew so well, for he employed it often. It was the tone of tolerance a scientist adopts to a layman. Have you ever taken an interest in birds, Dr. Deo? There are some fine birds a clever fellow like you could learn to imitate. Hervey Deo did not enjoy that dinner. He was up at daybreak, and he attacked his work with a cold and terrible energy. He stuffed a whole family of bobolinks and dissected snipe by the dozen. He sat up till his eyes ached writing a masterly treatise on the habits and home life of the adult pelican. Deo the bee man, his lips kept saying. I'll show him who's a bee man, I'll show him. But he found it impossible to withdraw from social life. The adulation he received as the most perfect imitator of a bee extant had come to be necessary to him. He continued to go out to social functions. He continued to be asked to imitate a bee. He continued to comply. Mina's smile had less and less of an attentive quality in it. She began to find excuses for not going with him, but he insisted that it was her duty. She could not give him adequate reasons for evading it. He was 40 when he went down to New York to attend a dinner, a very special dinner, of the Ornithological Congress of the World, then in session. For months he worked to prepare a paper that would definitely place him at the head of his science, now that Schwebel was no more. It was on the mental habits of grouse. He rose to read it, but some bibulous lesser bird man in the rear of the hall called out, "Forget the grouse, give us the bee." Others took up the cry, Forget the grouse, give us the bee. Forget the grouse, give us the bee. The whole room took up the cry, "Forget the grouse, give us the bee." Yes, yes, the bee. We want the bee. We want the bee. We want the bee. Ornithologists have their light moods. He twisted the tablecloth in great despair, a furious refusal stuck in his throat. Habit was sadly stronger than he. Bzz, bzz, bzz. They sang, "He's a jolly good fellow, which nobody can deny." A jolly good fellow who was the last thing in the world Hervey Deo had ever wanted to be. This, then, was his fame. He returned to his home city. His house was silent when he entered it. On his desk was a note. "Dear Hervey, I've taken the children and gone to live with Mother. I love you as much as ever, but I cannot live with the bee. If I should hear you buzz just once more, I should go mad. Don't forget to put on your galoshes. Mina." He went out of the house. Deliberately, he did not wear his galoshes. It was a slushy night. At 7, they took him to the hospital with a severe case of influenza. In the morning, a careless nurse left a newspaper where he could reach it. An item struck his eye. Hervey Deo is dangerously ill in St. Paul's Hospital. He is the man who can imitate a bee. When he read this, Hervey Deo let the paper slip from his fingers and sank back on his pillow. When the doctor came in, he found him lying, staring at the ceiling. A glance told the doctor that Hervey Deo had not long to live. The doctor sought to rouse him from his torpor, to fan the flickering fame of his interest. He turned on his professional bedside smile. "Ah," said the doctor. "Thinking about bees, I'll wager." No, Hervey Deo got out feebly. "Not bees. But surely I'm not mistaken. You are Deo, the famous bee man." Hervey Deo struggled to muster up enough vitality enough to cry. "I'm a bird man." But he could not. "Come now," said the doctor genially. "Won't you imitate that bee for me?" Hervey Deo tried to glare a negative, but had not the strength. "I've heard so much about it," said the doctor, "and I've never heard you do it, you know." On a faint ebb of strength, Hervey Deo managed to say, "Really? No, never." Hervey Deo, with a final effort, gathered together all the little last strength in him. "It goes like this. Bzzz, bzzz. And that is the end of The Man Who Could Imitate a Bee by Richard Connell. More on that discussion of whatever that was in about 30 seconds. The Man Who Could Imitate a Bee by Richard Connell. You've been listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM or on WRCT.org. I am Chamomile or DJ Sideways or Distracted Driver. I go by many names on this station. Most of my shows / all of my shows are on Thursday at 1 p.m. I'll at 10:30 p.m. and this one, which is at 11:30 p.m. If you want to listen to the radio this weekend, I would highly recommend it. This weekend, tune into Massey Zoo Weekend on WRCT Pittsburgh. From Friday at noon to Sunday at midnight, we'll be spending 60 straight hours of our favorite artists and bands, including live performances from 5 local bands. You can visit WRCT.org to view the full schedule for our annual music marathon. I would tune in. There's a lot of good artists. You can see the whole schedule online. It'll be a great weekend. Overall, let's just get into the next show. Bruce Springsteen 666 has got some good cuts for you, I assume. And hopefully, if you haven't fallen asleep by now, get up and dance. But let's hear some more Rain, and we'll transition.
Hey radio listeners, this is WRCT Pittsburgh. Hope you enjoyed those bedtime stories, but now it's time to get up and get ready for the weekend. My name is Bruce Springsteen 666, and this is Spiritual Music, a show that plays all kinds of electronic music at the midnight hour on Fridays. Tonight, I invite you to rave in trance, trance being the name of the club I would have in the future. Some of these tracks that I will be playing tonight are unfortunately not available on Spotify. The first track is Hardstyle Drops by the one and only Bass Hunter. Track names are available on WRCT.org. Let's dance.